Today's sponsor is Kids Discover Online. At the end of the show, I'll tell you more how Kids Discover Online drives inquiry-based learning and about a free webinar I'm doing with Richard Byrne and Monica Burns next Tuesday, October 3rd. Episode 158, Research Schools. What are they and how do they work?
The 10-Minute Teacher Podcast with Vicki Davis. Every weekday, you'll learn powerful, practical ways to be a more remarkable teacher today.
Today, we're talking with Erin Marvel, and this is an example of an awesome meeting. So I was at ISTE this year in San Antonio, and I'm walking the halls, and I had been looking for my friend Todd Nasloney, and I look over, and I see a very friendly-looking fellow with a Kids Deserve It shirt, and it was Erin Marvel, who has been Todd's assistant principal for a little while, and we struck up a conversation. Erin is passionate about research schools. Erin, explain for us, what is a research school?
Well, I think the easiest way to explain what a research school is to compare it to a teaching hospital. I think a lot of people are more familiar with the structure of a teaching hospital, so you'll have doctors that are what we'll call them master doctors, and they'll be supervising and mentoring new doctor residents. All while this is happening, there's also research happening alongside that. The beauty of that is that it's a perfect combination of practitioners and researchers to share information, because both sides have very valid information. But often there's that gap and there's a lack of communication between the two groups of people.
So I love this idea because, you know, I've had some others on the show. Bill Selleck is one example where they have a researcher on staff and they've been researching flexible seating, and they found an incredible ability to innovate very rapidly because of having a researcher on staff. Why do you think more schools are not embracing this approach?
For one thing, when you look at researchers, a lot of what they write is has a lot of very high language. It's very niche oriented, and they're really talking to other researchers. And also, what they are researching is not actually practical in the sense for a teacher. And so I think there's this hesitation to get involved with research because a lot of people don't understand it. They are afraid that maybe there's this lack in the way they're doing things. And that research is going to expose them possibly. And a lot of people just don't have a lot of experience doing research. And so when they hear action research projects, they get a little bit nervous and they don't know what that first step would actually look like.
So what does the first step actually look like?
First of all, understand what the research says currently and what the literature says currently about whatever you want to study. And so once you find out what that is, you begin to implement some kind of new strategy, some kind of new teaching method. And so it's very simple. And at that point, you want to gather some kind of data, which we do what we do wonderfully in education. We're usually overwhelmed with data. But the idea of action research is then you take that data and you really break it down and you get into the specifics about how that data connects to a specific teaching method. Not necessarily, a lot of times when we break down data, we do it by demographics, African-American populations, whites, socioeconomics, or LEP students. But how does it connect to the teaching method itself? And then how can we improve that method over a long period? Because one thing we find, when you go to a sit-down workshop, teachers bring that back and they immediately implement it for maybe a week or so, but then there's not that long sustaining practice and finding where you failed and finding where you succeed and then building on that. And that's really what action research, the beauty of research schools and action research really has.
Well, and I also love it because so many of us, we can just see research and we want to apply it and we do. But there are a lot of people who sit back and say, ah, but that research doesn't apply to me in my school because we're different because blank. In some ways, it does take out that argument. And I guess some people could say it holds your feet to the fire, but couldn't it really make a school with unique circumstances even better?
Almost definitely, because you touched on something very important. A lot of research, you're right, is not generalizable to the overall population. And so if you look at a lot of research, it may be done in Greece or Turkey or Northeast in the United States, which is completely different than the South or the West. The beauty also of research schools or action research is that you're working with your population, your students. There's no doubt whether or not it works or whether it doesn't work. with those students. And so you're right, it does hold your feet to the fire, and it becomes so much more real and so much more relevant than some research that you read on a piece of paper from a country a thousand miles away.
So some people would say, okay, this sounds great, but how do you fund it?
Well, I really think I think the first step is not necessarily research schools, but something that a new term that I've read is educational engineers. So if you think about an engineer, their job is to understand the science, the theoretical behind a particular study, and to understand the practice and to kind of be that bridge of how do I now apply the theoretical and the research and put it to practice? How do I understand physics and build a bridge? And so educational engineers do the exact same thing. They take that theoretical that's very confusing and very abstract, and then they say, okay, how do I now translate that and get it into the classrooms? And I think if districts begin to set aside money in order to hire these educational engineers, then they can begin going into campuses or maybe do a pilot campus and really work really strenuously with that particular campus to get something like that going. Because you really do need an expert, like an engineer type figure.
When I think of this approach, I first saw it at the American School of Bombay, ASB in India, in Mumbai, India, with Shabi Luthra, who's head of their R&D department. And they actually have a literal R&D department with multiple people working in it that are part of leading innovation at their school and partner with the curriculum director. But their curriculum director does the curriculum. The R&D department works with the innovation and ongoing improvement. Isn't that what you're kind of talking about?
Exactly. Yes. And I love that they have a research and development department. The only other place that has something like that would be Houston ISD, because I actually met the lady who is a statistician, and she really took all that data, sometimes that data that I was talking about that's overwhelming, and she breaks it down into more digestible parts and really made more sense out of it. And so having a research and development department, they have that niche and those specific skills that teachers and principals don't have, and for good reason. They don't necessarily need to have them, but making that information, that data more digestible and more comprehensible and more practical is a really important step in this process.
Do you think that there is a mistake that principals or superintendents might make if they say, okay, we want to have a research school? What's the biggest mistake they should avoid making as they embark?
I would say probably taking on too much all at once, because it is a lot to learn and it is a mind shift. You're not going about changing practice on your campus in the exact same way. Kind of like back alluding to what I was saying earlier, our typical way to change a campus is to send teachers or to send administrators to a professional development, and they come back and they teach it to everyone. Action research is a long-standing, a long-term commitment. And so I think you want to come up with a good plan. And just a good resource that I'll throw out there is Brown University. If you just Google Brown University Action Research, it will tell you a lot of information about how to get something like this started, what it is, what it isn't, and different resources that you can use to get going.
His name is Aaron Marvel. We'll put all of this information in the show notes. And I hope that you will be challenged to think about research schools. I love the example he gave us at the beginning that in some ways it's like a teaching hospital. And there's a lot of exciting possibilities. And I'll tell you, where I've seen some of the greatest innovation and the greatest innovators I've shared here on the show, they have been from research schools. So think about this emerging area of practice as something you can do to further innovation on your campus and be more remarkable. Today's sponsor is Kids Discover Online. They're doing awesome things to drive inquiry-based learning. Join me, Richard Byrne, Monica Burns, and Kids Discover on Tuesday, October 3rd at 4:30 p.m. Eastern Time for a special webinar, 10 Ideas for Excellent Inquiry-Based Learning. Go to kidsdiscover.com/inquiry to sign up for free. Kids Discover Online lets students explore 150 different science and social studies units for elementary and middle school learners at 3 different lexiles. It's a perfect inquiry-based tool you can use in your classroom and with your students. Again, go to kidsdiscover.com/inquiry to sign up for the webinar and learn more about Kids Discover Online.
Thank you for listening to the 10-Minute Teacher Podcast. You can download the show notes and see the archive at coolcatteacher.com/podcast. Never stop learning.